Yes, you're listening to Horns Up. I'm Animesh.
And I'm Peter.
And from us two metalheads to everyone who's listening, it doesn't matter if you celebrate it or not, but we wish your families, friends, and all metalheads a very happy Diwali and festive season. Yes, it's not the Christmas festive season for those listening from the US or the UK or wherever you are listening from. But hey, if you think about it, this time in India, it's the season to do a lot of unnecessary shopping, to stuff your face without a care for a diet, and to catch up with friends and family. Of course, this year, we're doing all of that with the shadow of the pandemic still over us. Peter, having a decent festive time?
Yeah, I mean,
Zoom it is what it good, is.
Yeah, Zoom has been a good replacement.
I guess. Now, I'll segue from that opening bit by saying that we are serving up a firecracker of an episode today, what with Diwali being associated with crackers and all. And though a lot of states in India are banning physical crackers, we've got you covered with a sonic boom. No, it's not a large light up the sky kind of a firecracker. That's what we call an anar here in Bombay. But it is what we call a rassi bomb. It's short but packs a lot of punch. We are doing a breakdown of the lead single from the Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons' new album, We Are the Bastards. It's called Son of a Gun. And this chat is with the band's frontman, Neil Starr. So, let's fucking go.
We'd like to welcome to Horns Up the frontman for Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, Neil Starr. How's it going, Neil?
Yeah, really good, thanks. How are you guys?
We're okay. Doing all right. As now, okay now as it can be. Yeah. Alrighty, so Neil, today we're going to try and analyze the lead single from the band's second album, We Are the Bastards. It's called Son of a Gun. And before we break it down, here's the song in entirety.
Corruption, cover up the truth, make you think you have control.
All right, sure. Neil, let's do this. It's time for Breakdown.
All right.
Son of a Gun is the lead single from your upcoming album, and it starts off with a gnarly bass riff. Did you always expect the song to play the role of the lead single?
No, honestly. I guess when you're writing songs, you don't think about singles, or at least we don't. When I heard the riff for the first time, I kind of thought this might open the album, potentially, because it was a good pace to the song and plenty of energy. So I thought that would potentially make a good album opening track. But it didn't even make that in the end. We weren't thinking at the time, this will definitely be a single, or this will be the first single. Until you've written all of the songs for the album and decided which songs, once they're recorded, which ones will go on the album, I guess. At that point, you start thinking about which ones would make good singles, you know?
Alrighty, let's continue. Ignorance is danger. Ignorance is good. Close your eyes and play pretend. None of this is true. Cover up corruption. Cover up the truth. Make you think you have control, but they're controlling you. Shoot to kill. All right, so in the previous verse here, you're talking about lies and truth, and so far my reaction is, hey, he's talking about the media, which then leads me to ask the question, who is the Son of a Gun? Because to my mind, it was the photographers who were shooting for the kill, pardon the pun.
No, that's what I love about lyrics, is that, you can listen to lyrics and you can totally mean something to you that's not necessarily what I was thinking, but you're not far from the truth, honestly. Like, when it's about media, it's about politicians, governments, people who lead, social media, everything kind of rolled into one, really, because, so the lyrics in some places kind of say what I mean quite literally, which, like, make you think you have control, but they're controlling you. We're getting shown what the news is. It's handpicked to show us. So we're told what we want, we'll tell them what they want to see, we won't. Same with like adverts on your phone or all this kind of stuff on your phone. You're shown what they want to show you. I'm shown what they want to show me. It's not necessarily what the truth or the most important things that are going on are, it's what we're led to believe and what we want to be shown. And I quite often think, well, they're showing us this, but what is the real truth? What is the actual stuff that I should be knowing about, which I'm never going to be told about by all these different sources and governments and all that stuff,
All right. Let's continue. Okay, and I'm nitpicking here, but I really wish the guitars were a bit, just a hair louder in the mix, because I thought a lot of the wah and the antics that the guitars are doing, and which are sitting on top of the rhythm, especially during the chorus part, they're getting a little bit lost. Of course, it's the chorus, but do you think that's a fair assessment?
Again, that's the beauty of music, Like, for me, I obviously like the mix because I gave it a thumbs up when it came back. But I don't know if I listen to... I think certain people listen to different instruments more in music than others. Like, for me, being totally truthful, as a singer in the band, I'm probably listening to the vocal more than anything else. So I'm probably not I'm probably not thinking so much about the drums or the guitars or but it's a killer lick on the guitar. I love that lick. So
yeah, you
know,
it is.
I don't think it would be a bad thing if it was turned up, you know, because it's a cool piece.
Let's continue.
You know, there's another verse and chorus, but this time it's pretty clear that the song's about, you know, media consumption or news consumption. What made you want to write this in the first place? I mean, was there any specific incident that kind of inspired this song?
No, it wasn't one specific thing. I do get frustrated when, like, I don't watch the news so much, but when I do, I get frustrated. But, like, obviously, like, you see things on your phone, and I consume a lot of stuff on my phone, like I know a lot of people around the world do. So it frustrates me when I read some stuff that, you know, even friends sometimes, you know, you think you know your friends really well, and then sometimes they'll totally blow your mind with how naive that I think they're being in a certain situation over something, you know. And it wasn't one specific incident. Obviously, like, I wrote these lyrics just at the start of lockdown, probably, when all this COVID-19 stuff happened, and I don't know, this whole situation the world in is blowing my mind anyway. So, yeah, I'm not huge into my conspiracy theories, but, you know, I do think sometimes, like, what's the agenda, you know? What am I not being told? What am I missing here? Because it just all seems insane to me. But
yeah. I mean, you brought it up. I was just going to say conspiracy theories, right? I mean, there's so many going around about everything around the situation, right?
Yeah. It's, like I say, I'm not huge into all that conspiracy theory stuff, but I do try and think, you know, not just in one direction. I do try and keep an open mind on everything. And I don't know, man. Like, it just seems to me, like I say, there's got to be there's more to this than meets the eye. And that's not just for this COVID situation. I think there's always more to everything than meets the eye. You know, I dread to think what actually goes on behind closed doors with the high up powers of the world, you know, what actually gets done and said, and, you know, what they decide we're allowed to know and not allowed to know and stuff is crazy.
You mentioned that you wrote this at the beginning of the lockdown, or around the time when the lockdown was being imposed for the first time.
It was actually the first song I wrote. It was the first lyrics and melody I wrote for the album, actually. So yeah, it would have been at the very start, probably March, I guess, March time.
So the question then becomes, because of how heavy the pandemic and the lockdown is on everyone's mind right now around the world, how much did it weigh on you while writing this song? I think what I'm trying to ask is, was this a reaction as such to what was happening around you?
Subconsciously,
of you trying to figure it out?
I think not consciously. In fact, I was trying, if anything, I was trying not to write about COVID in my mind. I was obviously aware that I had a lot of lyrics and melodies to write all in one go. So I did want to try and make an effort not to make it into a COVID-themed album, you know, concept album. But so if anything, I was trying not to, but I think subconsciously it's got to be in there because
yeah,
you know, I'm in the same situation as everyone else where like I'm finding myself in this unfamiliar position, and it's bound to have an impact, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But at the end of the day, it is a product of your circumstances.
Well, I think to a degree it's got to be. It wasn't a conscious decision,
yep.
But you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm writing about being frustrated by, you know, the lack of information we're given sometimes, and by like how people can't see the obvious truths in front of them sometimes, and you know, I'm writing a song at the start of a pandemic, so I guess it's got to be linked in there somewhere, you know.
All right, let's continue.
You know, it's great to hear the bass front and center. Why did the song need this section?
I mean, of just the bass. I don't write the music, but for me, listening to it for the first time, the song's quite intense and quite energetic. And I agree with you that I think it felt like it could do with like just a moment to breathe, you know, before the solo would kick in. Because obviously it could have just gone into a blistering solo without any kind of break. But I think the song benefits from having that stopping. But it wasn't something I chose personally to have. But, you know, when I heard it, I didn't question it. I didn't think it wasn't the right thing to do. You know, like when I heard it, I thought, yeah, that sounds like what the song should do to me too. So I was kind of in agreement with everybody else in the band with that, you know. And like, it is nice to sometimes hear the bass because it's an instrument you don't always get the limelight for any kind of time, you know. It's quite often an instrument that's kind of blended in with everything else and, you know, doesn't always stand out. So I think it's nice to have that moment where it's, the bass mm-hmm. is pumping through whilst the rest of the track is having a moment of breath before the solo comes in. I've always wondered what that noise is, though, just before the solo comes in, like that noise.
Yeah, it's a pick scrape that's running across the entire strings from, I'm guessing, the bridge pickup onwards onto the strings.
Because I wasn't, again, because of COVID, I wasn't there whilst guitars were recorded or any of it. Only we had to record in isolation. So, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't, unfortunately, that was one of the biggest differences, I guess, recording this album compared to previous ones is, you know, we weren't all in the same room at the same time. So I haven't seen how certain things were done. And, you know, it's a strange way of doing it. But I guess, you know, I'm just grateful we were able to still record at the end of the day, because not everybody was as lucky as we were to be able to still get into a studio and do it. But yeah, I've always, when I heard that noise, I was like, it's got to be a guitar, because we only ever do like, you know, guitars and drums, really. There's no other instruments we really use. I mean, we have dabbled with a harmonica in different places sometimes, but yeah, it's like a strange sound, I thought. But cool, I liked it.
Awesome. Let's hear the guitar solo. Wow. Now that's a solo that stretches out over 20 seconds.
Awesome. How long is the song? Like less than 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I timed it actually. And a general, like in this song, a general verse chorus is around, say, 40 seconds. And the solo is around 20 seconds. So it's almost like an entire verse on its own. But the question really here is, what's Phil's solo writing process like? Like, does he just come in and plug in and belt it out, or does he prepare record, nitpick over the note choices and the note selections, etc., and keep reworking it until he's happy with it.
The times I've seen it happen, it's incredible. So basically, I'm pretty sure he's just making it up on the spot, and there's never any like overdubbing. It's like it's one take, and then maybe you'll say, okay, I didn't like that. Let's try something new, and then. But it'll be completely different. It won't have any elements of what he did in the previous one, you know. And you'll just be sat there thinking, you must have rehearsed this for like days to be this good and tight at playing the solo. But he's literally just like feeling it at the time. It's an incredible thing to see. I mean, like I said, I wasn't there for this particular guitar solo process this time around. But when I saw the stuff on the first album, it blew my mind that. You know, how you could do one style of solo and then be like, oh, no, I don't like that. And then just play something completely different. And they're both incredible. And it's like, well, you know, but he is a guitar master. So I take my hat off.
So do we. Let's continue. Leadership contentment, leadership abuse. Spread the fear, we must adhere. There's a need for proof. Let the public speak out. Choose. It doesn't matter where you turn, either way you lose. Shoot to kill, for the thrill. I'm more than a son of a gun. Take the pill that makes you real, and smile as you swallow the crown. Shoot to kill.
Wow.
Is it bad that my favorite part of that last verse is that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the song is just 3 minutes, but, you know, sometimes
less than
straight up. Yeah, less than 3 minutes. Sometimes straight up simplicity. I mean, it's just marvelous, right? Sometimes.
I agree. For me, it's one of those songs that when it ends, I just want to play it again, you know? Like, I think it's one of the. Some songs have those kind of. Qualities where you just want to put it on again straight away, but
yeah, it's got that like up tempo kind of like, you know, energy that you just want to like get like short doses of a bit, I guess.
Hopefully the BBC, like what I've noticed is whenever you hear this kind of a banger that's short and sweet, generally the BBC tends to pick it up and use it as a montage. Use it in a montage somewhere, either on Top Gear or something else. I mean, that's how.
Class.
Yeah, then yeah. I think this one will lend itself to that.
Well, yeah, that would be awesome. That would really be awesome.
Alrighty, so that was Breakdown, but we aren't done just yet. We still have a couple of more questions about the song and the album. Here's a weird question, and you can choose not to answer it. When a band named Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons release a song that begins with rumbling bass and packs a whole lot of punch in a really short time, I mean, there's bound to be someone in the room who brings up Motorhead. Was that a thought that crossed your heads while writing this song?
When I hear some of the riffs, I think Motorhead. Definitely, but then when I think about it, it's obvious because Phil used to write the riffs with Motorhead, so
yeah,
it's just natural that like we're gonna have riffs that sound like Motorhead, you know, because the guy who wrote those riffs is the guy who's writing riffs with us now. So I definitely hear something. Yeah, I mean, that you could take certain riffs from this album, from the last album, and they would sit on a new Motorhead album really nicely. I sometimes think, I wonder what Lemmy would have done on this.
Like, obviously, like what
son of a gun.
Yeah.
Not from the point of view of like, what would he have done? I want to do that. But more like, I just wonder how he would have heard the riff and what he would have interpreted it as, you know, as a lyric writer and melody maker, you know. So that does cross my mind sometimes. But yeah, obviously I've never wanted to try and write in any way that he would. I just want to write the way I want to write, which
of course
for me, luckily for me, Phil has always wanted me to do that. So but yeah, it, you know, it gets me curious sometimes to think, well, yeah, if Phil had brought this riff into a Motorhead rehearsal, like what would the other members have done with it? It's, you know, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, ifs and buts. Anyways.
All right. So, you know, we brought this up earlier on, right? I mean, about Son of a Gun as a single. But while, you know, after the recording process was all done, was there any other song that was considered, you know, or in the reckoning to be the first single for the album? And which one was it?
The opening track of the album, which is also the title track of the album. And I think the reason we didn't release it first is mainly because it has swearing in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously, like, you know, we know that most radio stations aren't going to be able to play that. So
we kind of
thought, well, you know, the first single back, we're going to want radio to play it. So, yeah. And there was no way, I don't know if you've heard the chorus, because we have put a little snippet of it out, because the next video, we're having fans submit clips of themselves, like, doing stupid shit and just singing along and stuff. So we released like a 10-second snippet of the chorus, and there's no way we could have cancelled out any of the swearing, basically. So it's never going to get on radio. It is what it is. But, you know, it's a bit of a, hopefully a bit of a fan anthem kind of song, you know. And we would have loved to release that one first from that point of view, because we are very much a band that tries to stay close to our fans, because, you know, a lot of those fans who come to see us, they've discovered us obviously through Motorhead, you know, a lot of them, that's of the obvious truth. So, and Motorhead and their fans always had a really close bond, you know, and you know, we feel that same kind of bond with those people. And yeah, that's why we've tried to include them in this next video, because again, you know, during this lockdown, we can't do things in the normal way, so we're trying to think of slightly different ways of doing things. And that song that we released next lends itself really well to that brotherhood and camaraderie between us and the fans and all that stuff. So, but yeah, that was kind of the song that we thought would be good to release first. But yeah, basically because of the swearing, we decided that it wouldn't be the best move.
Yeah, I think it'll go down live quite well once you'll finally play again, you know, in front of the audience.
I think so. All right, well, yeah, it's guaranteed, I think.
Yeah. Right.
But
so, you know,
there's a few songs on the album, though, that could have been this for, you know, if you're thinking that's when it's an energetic, punchy track as the first song, there's a couple more on the album that could have easily been that song, you know?
All right.
But, you know, I guess for whatever reason, we felt the Son of a Gun was the best one to go with.
Okay.
I'm frantically trying to think of some of the other songs I would like to tell you which other ones, but I can't think.
That's all right. You know, you mentioned that, you know, Where the Bastards was recorded during the lockdown. I mean, considering you all, I'm assuming, recorded all in person, and I'm guessing live a bit also in the first album, what was this experience like? I mean, did you enjoy it? And if you can really say, was it more productive or efficient than the normal recording sessions?
I definitely enjoyed it, but it was definitely a different feeling, you know? I think, like, part of the energy and aggression that I personally was feeling whilst recording my parts was helped by the fact that, you know, I wasn't able to do anything else at the time. So I guess I really had a lot of energy and a lot of focus ready to go for laying down my parts, you know, because there was literally nothing else happening. Couldn't do anything else. We were only allowed to record because it's classes work. So we could travel for work in the UK. So, yeah, it was a different kind of energy, I think, because there was only me and Todd, the producer, guitarist, who also produced it, in the studio at the same time. So the dynamics were different, you know. I guess when you've got everybody in the room listening to you record, then you tend to get a bit more feedback, obviously, from people sharing ideas and things as you're recording. But you know, I kind of, it was just me and Todd. So, and obviously he's producing it, so he had plenty of ideas anyway. But yeah, it was kind of like fairly efficient process because it's just the two of us, and we, you know, there was nothing else to do. It was like, I'm here to record, and if I'm not recording, then there's nothing else I'm going to do. You know, there's no guitar. I'm not going to sit around while somebody tracks some guitars for a few hours. You know, I'm just going to go in, do it, and go out again, you know. And it didn't take too long. I think we were doing probably around 3 tracks a day, I think. So I probably was only in there a week.
Oh, wow.
And I say a day, I mean, they weren't long days. They were like probably 4 or 5 hour sessions.
Okay. All right. So just to shift gears a bit, what are your plans, you know, for promotion of the album? I mean, normally a tour or live gigs are kind of ruled out. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of like live stream gigs happening. Do you have anything on those lines planned?
We've definitely been talking about a live stream. Nothing that I can sort of give you any information on, unfortunately, as in, not that I'm holding information back, but there's no date or anything, you know, or confirmed plans for it. But I think the longer this continues, the more likely it is that we will do something like that, you know? I mean, we've canceled all our plans, live plans, until at least April. Everything we had up until April has moved. I guess the plan is just to do as much as we can on social media and spread the word that way. You know, there's not really much more we can do. Like I say, if we can make a live stream happen, then I think we will at some point. But that, I guess, will probably be more closer to the time of the album release, or maybe the week of release or something. We might try and sort something out for then, you know.
Okay, and this kind of ties in to the question also, is that what's your ambition or hope for this record once it's released?
My main ambition, really, is, it's going to sound weird now, but like, I've been in bands before and always, you know, you give 1,000,000% to it and you're so emotionally invested that it can become difficult when you try and set too many or give yourself too many pressures, if that makes sense. But with this band, I've always kind of tried to just enjoy it and not even worry about any aspect of it. I don't know if that sounds like a cop-out to your question or not, but I don't genuinely have any expectations. I have a hope that the people who like the first album will like this one as well. And I really think there's a good chance that's going to happen, because I think the album's really good. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, my main goal right now is just to get back to a place where we were before with live music, so we can play shows, because for me, that's my favorite part of being in the band, you know, is actually playing live gigs. Yeah, no genuine ambitions personally set for it for myself, other than, you know, that it'll be enjoyed by as many people as possible, really. And that, you know, we can keep people on board and keep people sane enough until the time when we can meet each other again and do some gigs.
That's noble.
Yeah. No, and I hope so, because, I mean, you know, music like this needs to be kind of enjoyed live, right? I mean, there's a complete different dynamic or experience, really, listening to it with the band right in front of you and loud. So, yeah.
From our point of view, it's written to be played live. You know, we're not going into the studio to write a studio album, if that makes sense. We're going in to record it in a way that we can translate it live, you know. We want to be able to play the songs live first and foremost. So yeah, that's definitely the number one aim, is to perform it live.
On that note, Neil, thank you so much for taking some time out and chatting with us and making this happen.
I know. Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. It's been a different experience for me, so I really, really enjoyed it. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Live music. Ooh, boy. What are your thoughts, Peter? Like, at this moment, the middle of November, the lockdown has eased up in Bombay. People are moving about. And we're seeing the first signs of the live music scene coming back as well. Are you ready to go for a gig?
No. Short answer.
What if it's Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons?
That's a toughie, right? I mean, like, I was looking at least one of our venues here in Bombay, Antisocial, put out a lineup for the next couple of weeks. And at the end of the month, the Bombay boys, Zignema, performing. I don't know, it'll be the same, man. Like, first of all, they say that, you know, it's going to be social distancing and all. And I've probably seen Zignema countless times over the last 12 odd years.
And those gigs cannot be fucking socially distanced.
Yeah, like, I'm just thinking, I mean, the frontman is a good friend, Jimmy, right? I mean, he just waits for that moment where he can, like, get everyone into a wall of death or mosh pit. And now what's he going to say when he's on stage? I mean, everyone's just going to be, like, awkwardly standing with their arms crossed, looking at each other. And I don't know, man. I mean, would you be comfortable playing a gig with social distancing? I have to throw this to you.
Interesting question. I haven't really thought about it, frankly. Playing a gig with social distancing, I mean, hey, if, let me put it this way. If the price is right, why not?
Okay,
so that's one end of the equation, of course. But I don't know. I think I definitely think that, you know, we'll I mean, for the Riot Peddlers or for Solar DT, where so much of our act is like, you know, to do with interacting with the crowds, etc.
Yeah.
Too, and to let them, you know, let their hair down and have fun. It will be tough, and I'm fully expecting a lot of sarcasm, a lot of snide remarks at, you know, please mosh carefully and whatever, you're not allowed to, whatever, you know, those kind of remarks, etc.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man, the joy of hearing live amplifiers hum, maybe that'll be enough. After so many months, almost like what, it's 9 months now.
Yeah.
After that, maybe that is enough for people at the moment. For if you really want to, you know, step back out.
Sure, of course. And I mean, I understand that, you know, there are some people who really want to need it and all. For me personally, at this time and space, I'm not comfortable. I mean, like,
hey, neither am I.
Yeah,
neither am I, and I'll fully attest with you. Like, no matter, yeah, it'll become an actual, like, you know, like, if we are approached, or even if I just want to go out and attend a gig, it's going to be a lot of thought, because it's a decision which I'm still struggling with.
True.
Yeah, this pandemic isn't over, and it's not going to be for quite some time. So yeah. If this is the way we all are supposed to be living with it, it's time to bring back that phrase, right? The new normal?
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be the new normal.
Yeah, for live music here in India. What do you guys think? Would you go out for a gig today? Come on, yeah, chat with us. We're at hornsuppod.com on the interwebs, or you can use the Twitter machine. It's at hornsuppod. I'm at Asmawani.
And I'm at Trend Crusher.
This is Horns Up.
Horns Up, guys.